Best-selling food writer Michael Ruhlman considers the egg the Rosetta Stone of the kitchen. Learn the language of the egg, he says, understand completely this amazing and beautiful oblong orb, and you can enter new realms of cooking. Michael Ruhlman's latest cookbook pays homage to the many different ways the egg ends up in cooking, from the obvious omelet to the delicate souffle, to light meringues and pastry, to sauces and batters and noodles, and as a topping on all kinds of dishes. Michael Ruhlman joins us for a culinary exploration of the world's most versatile ingredient, the egg, with midday foodies John Shields of Gertrude's and Henry Hong of Waterfront Kitchen. Midday eats the egg after the news from NPR. Best-selling food writer Michael Ruhlman considers the egg the Rosetta Stone of the kitchen. Learn the language of the egg, he says, understand completely this amazing and beautiful oblong orb, and you can enter new realms of cooking. Michael Ruhlman's latest cookbook pays homage to the many different ways the egg ends up in cooking, from the obvious omelet to the delicate souffle, to light meringues and pastry, to sauces and batters and noodles, and as a topping on all kinds of dishes. Michael Ruhlman joins us for a culinary exploration of the world's most versatile ingredient, the egg, with midday foodies John Shields of Gertrude's and Henry Hong of Waterfront Kitchen. Midday eats the egg after the news from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. President Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin met on the sidelines of today's D-Day commemorations in France. This was their first face-to-face exchange since the crisis in Ukraine, described by the White House as an informal conversation lasting roughly 15 minutes. Putin also chatted with Ukraine's new president, all of this raising hopes for an easing of East-West tensions. They were all there to mark the 70th anniversary of the Allied storming of Normandy beaches to liberate France from the Nazis. And in his speech, President Obama called it a day of gratitude.
We come to remember why America and our allies gave so much for the survival of liberty at this moment of maximum peril. We come to tell the story of the men and women who did it, so that it remains seared into the memory of a future world.
French President François Hollande says his country won't forget what it owes American soldiers. The unemployment rate held steady in May at 6.3%, but employers were hiring at a good clip for the fourth month in a row. 217,000 jobs added to payrolls. NPR's Chris Arnold breaks down the numbers.
Economists watch the job report closely since employment and personal spending are the biggest drivers of the U.S. economy, and this latest report was just slightly better than expected. Analysts had predicted a gain of around 210,000 jobs. The overall trend in the unemployment rate continues to be gradually down, though it didn't change this month. Job gains were broad-based. Professional and business services gained jobs. Healthcare and social services gained more than 50,000 jobs. Federal and state governments, though, cut jobs, down 10,000. The labor force participation rate was unchanged, and the Labor Department says the country's reached a milestone. Payroll employment now exceeds pre-recession levels. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
The leading presidential candidate in Afghanistan has narrowly escaped an attempt on his life. NPR's Sean Carberry reports Abdullah Abdullah was unharmed, but three bodyguards were killed.
Witnesses describe hearing two powerful explosions as Abdullah's convoy left a hotel in western Kabul. The blasts killed two civilians and a police officer in addition to the bodyguards. More than 20 people were injured. After the incident, Abdullah held two more rallies. Our campaign will continue and nothing will separate us from the Afghan people, Abdullah defiantly told the crowd at another hotel. The Taliban conducted high-profile attacks against election offices during the first round of voting this spring. This was the first fatal attack targeting a candidate. Abdullah is squaring off against Ashraf Ghani in the June 14th runoff vote. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
The Dow is up 72. This is NPR News. A new revelation in the growing scandal at Veteran Affairs. The organization's acting head says another 18 veterans whose names were kept off official electronic VA appointment lists have died. Sloan Gibson's asking the inspector general to see if those deaths were related to long wait times. Sylvia Matthews Burwell's poised to take the helm of Health and Human Services, confirmed by the Senate in a strong bipartisan vote, 78-17. And that makes her the new steward of the president's health care law. Republican Senator Mike Johanns voted to confirm, but he says she is facing an impossible challenge.
I think she's able to do the job that's before her. But I do believe that the problem she's going to face is that this law is so fatally flawed that she cannot be successful in implementing it.
Healthcare.gov still has some unresolved issues. Egypt's outgoing president has issued a new decree making sexual harassment a crime, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Merritt Kennedy reports this move was highly anticipated.
The new law carries penalties of jail time for no less than 6 months and or fines of about $700, with harsher sanctions for repeat offenders. It includes verbal along with physical harassment, whether in person or online. A recent United Nations survey found that more than 99% of women here reported experiencing sexual harassment or assault. In a place where sexual harassment is endemic and police routinely stand by, the big question now is whether this law will be enforced. For NPR News, I'm Merritt Kennedy in Cairo.
I'm Jean Cochran, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Novo Nordisk, committed to innovation in diabetes care for over 90 years. More at novonordisk-us.com.
It's 6 minutes after 1 o'clock, and you're listening to Midday here on your NPR news station, WYPR. Programming today is made possible by the Ivy Bookshop, presenting Week of Intrigue with veteran war correspondent Scott Anderson on Wednesday, June 11th, columnist for The Washington Post David Ignatius on Thursday, June 12th, and espionage writer Alan First on June 13th. More information about the Week of Intrigue at theivybookshop.com. Temperatures in the lower 80s today. This is WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks for joining us for the second part of our show. That music means it's time again for Midday Eats, our monthly foodie hour. Joining me again, Midday Eats contributors John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. Hello, John. Nice
Hello,
to see you.
Hello, Dan. Good to see you.
And Henry Hong is back of the Waterfront Kitchen. Food nerd Henry Hong. Nice to see you, Henry.
What's up, Dan?
Today, eggs are up. eggs are up and over easy.
Sunny side.
We're talking about the egg today, occasioned by the publication of a book by Michael Ruhlman. Michael Ruhlman is a best-selling food writer and cookbook author. He had a book, a very successful book called Ruhlman's 20, a book of 20 techniques for better cooking, which won a James Beard Award a couple of years ago. And he's won other awards, done a lot of writing. And he's appeared on several television shows, including he had a stint as a judge on The Next Iron Chef, on Iron Chef America. And he's been with that crazy guy, Anthony Bourdain, a few times on with some episodes of No Reservations on the Travel Channel with Anthony Bourdain. So Michael Ruhlman is joining us today to talk about the subject of his new book, The Egg. You can have it in an omelet. That's pretty obvious. Omelets are obvious, but egg sandwich, fried egg, broken egg sandwich, a frittata, a quiche, cakes, creams, fritters, batters, noodles. Eggs show up every place. Now, in this book, it's called Egg, not The Egg, but it's called Egg, a culinary exploration of the world's most versatile ingredient. And it's kind of hard to argue with that. Michael Ruhlman writes, "The greatest of all of our foods, the egg, combines beauty, elegance, and simplicity, a miracle of natural design, and, as food, bounty. Not only is the egg magnificent to eat, but for chefs, it's also a fundamental test of how well a person can cook." We can talk about that today. Michael Ruhlman writes, "If you could choose to master a single ingredient, no choice would teach you more about cooking than an egg. Learn to take the egg to its many differing ends, and you've enlarged your culinary repertoire by a factor of 10. Michael Ruhlman's book combines technical insights with recipes and gorgeous photographs. Anyway, it's great to get you on the show. Michael Ruhlman, welcome to the Midday Show on WYPR.
Happy to be here.
John Shields is with us from Gertrude's Restaurant and Henry Hong from Waterfront Kitchen in Fells Point in Baltimore. So say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, how are you?
How you doing? Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Michael, you, how did you sell this idea to a publisher? I was curious. This is sort of an homage to the egg. What got you thinking that you could make a whole cookbook based on the egg?
Well, it started with my previous book, Romans 20, where I look at 20 foods and techniques and ideas that can make you a better cook, and one of those is the egg. And when I tried to think of five recipes that would illustrate the use of the egg, like I had done for everything, for sauté, for roast, for grill, etc., my mind just reeled, because how do you choose five dishes for the egg? And I just felt my mind spinning, so I sort of gripped the walls, gripped my desk, and said, let's think about this logically. Okay, you can cook an egg in its shell or out of its shell. You cook it in its shell, you can cook it hard, you can cook it medium, you can cook it soft, you can sous vide it. Take it out of its shell, you can bake it, you can poach it, and then you can blend it, and then you can separate it. And suddenly, like explosions going off in the landscape of my mind, all these ideas about egg and started coming up, and I called my wife Donna into the dining room. I rolled out a big piece of parchment paper and said, write this down. And I went through every way you could use an egg, or as many as I could think of. And by the time I was done, I had a 5-foot-long roll of parchment paper with everything you can do with an egg. And that is what I showed my publisher. And they unrolled it and they said, wow. That was my book proposal.
Yeah, I read that and I was thinking, you know, he's right. I mean, the egg shows up every place, but even before you get to egg as an ingredient, there's so many ways to prepare an egg, to cook an egg, and starting with the fundamental one that a lot of people have problems with, and that is, at least I do. I know maybe you guys are better at this by now. A simple sunny side up fried egg. Let's just talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, how is that difficult?
Oh, you don't have a problem with it? It never comes out as good as it does in the diner. I don't have a diner quality fried egg in my repertoire, and I sort of gave up. I started flipping it over. You know what's that called?
Over easy.
Over easy. Yeah. I do an over easy because I can't come up with. My mother used to call, the late Rose Popple used to call a boon egg, because the yolk is up, nice and sunny, right? And you take toast, and when you take a toast and dip it in the yolk. She called that booning. That was called booning the egg. That was a boon egg. Right. That's a family word, but you can use it if you like.
Yeah, my mother, dippy egg.
She called those a dippy egg. Yeah. I've never been able to come up with a good dippy egg that wasn't well, full. Go ahead,
you know,
Michael.
A diner has a nice flat top that's well seasoned and it's not going to stick with a little bit of oil. At home, it's really helpful to have a good nonstick pan for a low heat egg. If you cook an egg too hot, the edges will get sort of brown and crispy, and sometimes that's good. But for a diner-style sunny-side-up egg, you want a little more gentle heat.
I've never been able to get there. Maybe I should practice it more.
Practice is the way to become a better cook. That's for sure. And I would do it more gently. I think that too many people cook eggs at too high a temperature.
Okay. Let me ask John Shields this, and Michael and Henry, that statement about being able to judge how far along a young chef is in their training by how well they can handle an egg. What do you think about that?
I think that's true. You can tell if they have training, if they know how to approach an egg. Like an omelet is a great
test
to see, you know, how they do. A lot of very good chefs will bring somebody in, do an interview, but then you get into the kitchen and you have to make an omelet.
Mm-hmm.
There are those simple tests. Soup is another one.
Okay.
You know.
What do you think about that,
Yeah,
Henry?
I was going to say that's a classic measure of one's skill. One of those, you know, not a colloquialism, but you know, one of those old benchmarks is how well can you make an omelet? And by omelet, I think most people, when they think omelet, they think omelet bar, where it's simply, you know, a scrambled egg where the whites and yolks are fairly well combined and just sort of wrapped around in a layer around stuff. But that's not really
an omelet.
A classical omelet.
No.
You know,
I couldn't get past the fried egg test, the sunny side up test. I am pretty good at an omelet. Michael, a little bit from you, Michael Ruhlman, on the omelet. What Henry just said, that's a lot of people have that idea that it's an egg wrap around ingredients. Yeah.
Yeah, they do, because, you know, they've been through the brunch buffet where you've got the chef cooking, you know, cooking individual omelets for people, and they're often done poorly. The last omelet I had was in, you know, in New York at some club, and it was just an abomination of what an omelet is. It's classical. I want to reiterate what the others said. There's a lot of skills that it shows a chef about a prospective hire. You need finesse. You need some knowledge. You need skill. You need craftsmanship to make a really nice omelet. We photographed. My wife photographed an omelet for the book, and that actually took me four times to get right, to get it the way I wanted to, because I think it should be perfectly pale. Yep. Perfectly uniform pale yellow, and it should be rolled. That's what an omelet is. It's not something filled with peppers and chorizo sausage that's sort of flipped in half.
Right.
So I think that we've sort of been trained in America to expect low results from our omelets.
Let's talk about some of your favorites from the cookbook, which is really a beautifully designed book. Michael, The Weekend Broken Yolk Fried Egg Sandwich. I made an allusion to that because I kind of like that. It's one of my favorite sandwiches. But talk about that a little bit, would you?
Well, it's one of the first eggs I started cooking. My dad taught me that. So it reminds me of my father, who I loved very much. And I've just been doing it since I was in fifth grade. And so it's easy, delicious, quick. And what I like about this one is that the yolk has a varying textures and flavors, because some of it gets cooked because you break the yolk, but some of it is still sort of fluid or just starting to congeal. So you've got a range of flavors that you don't get when you just fry an egg and leave the yolk whole. So I love the differing flavors, the textures, and I love just slathering some white bread with Hellman's mayonnaise, salt and pepper, and the egg, and a glass of milk, and it's a great Saturday lunch. I have it almost every weekend.
I was just gonna say, eggs, like a fried egg sandwich with mayonnaise, is such an awesome thing. It's like one of the most difficult things I have to convince my friends that it's good to actually do. I don't know, something about mayonnaise with breakfast foods is kind of off-putting to most people, but it makes sense. I mean,
you know what gets Henry Hong excited? We've been doing, Midday Eats for a couple of years now, maybe 3 years now, and I've never seen Henry quite as excited as when we talked about deviled eggs. and it's a thing with you, right?
I wanted to bring some today, but we're in an enclosed studio, and that kind of gives you the wins a little bit.
It's okay, Henry. But why deviled eggs? What excites you about deviled eggs?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's one of these foods that you invest a lot of time. Most home cooks, it's hard to make a good hard-boiled egg even to start off with, and then
don't say that.
Oh, no.
It's
not. No, I have my technique that works like almost 100% of the time. But folks have a hard time with it.
Wait, you mean getting it right?
Yes.
Yeah,
getting it right. Not overcooking it, not undercooking it?
Sure, keeping the yolks yellow instead of greenish from the sulfur.
Yeah,
And then the whole issue with peeling, which is sort of out of everyone's control, but, the whole thing. And, it's two steps, discrete processes whereby you cook and peel the eggs, cut them in half, and then you're making a filling out of the yolks.
That's
and
the part that excites you, is the filling. The filling
sure.
is the
and
part,
then,
right?
And but the whole thing really matters, the texture of the white combined with the texture of the filling and all that other stuff. And, we get this conversation all the time where people put, caviar and lobster and all this other stuff in it. And then sort of you don't want the egg to take, be second place. You still want it to be an egg, ultimately. So I think there's a lot of skill that you can inject into that.
Since we first talked about deviled eggs with Henry Hong on this show, Michael, I've noticed at parties, different parties over the years, last couple of years, if someone sets out some deviled eggs, they disappear.
They're the first things to go.
They do, yeah.
People really like them.
They are. They're. Every time I have a deviled egg or make some deviled eggs, I wonder, why don't I do this more often? These are so good.
Yeah.
And they're so easy and nutritious, and they're a perfect canopy for big groups. I mean, the cost they're so cost effective, and their cost versus deliciousness is sort of just a huge ratio. Again, it's not, the peeling can be difficult. I agree. Fresh eggs are harder to peel, and you don't want pitted whites. What I found was that if you pressure cook eggs, this makes peeling them a snap.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a great technique. If you're doing a lot of eggs, or if at your restaurant you do a lot of eggs, or if you're doing a soft yolked egg preparation, pressure cook them. It's just amazing. You can practically blow them out of their shell.
That is awesome. I'm trying to picture this. So how long in a pressure cooker? And I guess it would depend on how many eggs you put in there.
No, it takes about 7 minutes for a perfectly cooked hard-boiled egg. And the key part in any hard-boiled egg cooking is chilling them fast. If you don't chill them fast, that's when you get that green sulfurish rim around the yolk.
Mm-hmm.
So every bit as important as cooking the egg is chilling the egg. Putting it in an ice water for at least 10 minutes is key.
Before we go to our first break here with Michael Ruhlman, Henry, and John Shields, always when we get these cookbooks, John goes into the kitchen at Gertrude's with Doug, his chef, and you work up one of the recipes. Did you work up one of Michael's?
I did, and it seemed from reading the book, it was one of his favorites, and it's one of mine as well, the angel food cake. And it was just perfect. It came out beautiful, has so much richness, and we'll be eating it in a little bit.
Oh, I see it. It does look great. And that involves egg whites as well as yolk, or
yes,
what?
Yes, it's egg whites. There's no yolks.
No yolk at all.
No yolk at all. And so it's the perfect dessert, you know, if you're looking for something very, very light and so much different than a store-bought angel food cake.
Right.
We use local raised eggs, and there's just this richness to it that it seems like that it has butter or something in it, but it's just the whites of the eggs.
It shows up, that recipe shows up in Michael Ruhlman's book under eggs separated the white, and then the book is divided into these chapters: egg whole cooked in shell, egg whole cooked out of shell, egg whole cooked out of shell, egg as an ingredient, egg separated the yolk, egg separated the white, egg separated but used together. And he says recipes for each one of those. This is Midday Eats with John Shields and Henry Hong. Michael Ruhlman, a best-selling food writer, joining us this hour of the show to talk about his book, Egg, A Culinary Exploration of the World's Most Versatile Ingredient. You're welcome to call us at any time during this hour of the show to share a favorite egg recipe or a recipe that involves lots of eggs or just your favorite way to eat egg or cook egg. 410-662-8780. I'm going to tell you about egg in purgatory during this hour. Orvo in the purgatorio during this hour of Midday Eats. Please feel free to give us a ring. Toll-free long distance. This number is good from anywhere eggs are available, 866-661-9309. Use our Midday email address. It's midday@wypr.org. Midday Eats Eggs. We'll be right back. I just want to rehabilitate my image a little bit in case I gave away that I can't even fry an egg.
Don't forget the carbonara, page 164.
We'll get the carbonara in a minute. I just want to say something about what I said earlier in the show so Michael Ruhlman understands. I do know how to cook. I just have trouble with the fried eggs sunny side up.
What's the trouble?
Probably temperature, and probably because it's lack of practice, and because I don't want it to be runny, I flip it over and do it once over to make sure it's cooked because I don't like anything runny in a breakfast egg, okay? So this is the thing. I refer to it as a boon egg because my late mother used to call it a boon egg. But she would tip the frying pan and baste the thing with the hot grease over the top of the egg to get it perfect. So I don't do that. I have a flat griddle. So maybe I should practice basting the fried
egg. You could do that, or you could put a saucepan lid over it,
right,
so it would steam the top, and the top would congeal, so you get all the whites while keeping the yolk runny.
Okay. The truth is, I just haven't practiced enough. And now I feel bad.
Oh, damn!
I don't know. You probably think less of me now because I gave up something.
No.
You know, I don't like to be a failure in the kitchen at anything. I like to master all the little.
You're a great
pizza.
Cook.
I'm okay.
You're good.
I'm still
You're
working
really
on it.
You're really good.
John, what did you want to say about eggs today?
Well, I liked when I was looking through the book.
Michael's book, great book.
Great book. I love it. I really love it. And wonderful illustration and technique on poaching eggs. You know, people constantly are talking about if they're going to do a brunch, they're afraid to do any kind of a Benedict kind of thing because, A, they're afraid to do the poached eggs because they said, I can't poach an egg. And they don't want to make hollandaise because they're afraid that that's too difficult to do. Both total egg.
Yeah.
And Michael's book really, really, with the poached egg, gives wonderful steps. Mm. And the photographs are unbelievable.
What's the secret on a poached egg, Michael?
I believe the secret, there are a couple of them. First is to let the runny part of the egg white run off, because that's the stuff that's going to fly away anyway in the cooking liquid. And so it leaves you just with the solid part of the egg white and gives you a nice shape.
Yeah,
and the second part is to cook it gently. Don't put it into boiling water. Put it into water that has come to a boil and then you've turned off. And then you can just watch it cook and pull it out when you see that all the white is set. It's actually very simple. And people get, I know people get sort of afraid of poaching eggs, but it's one of the easiest things in the world to do and it's delicious.
I have a question. So I remember once upon a time in the kitchen at home, I haven't seen this in years, it's a pan in which you pour water with another layer of metal and three holes, and in each of those three holes you put a cup, a little metal cup, and in each of those cups you drop an egg, and then the egg is sort of like a double boiler almost type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a poached egg. What you're describing is an egg that's cooked in liquid. Not in a little cup, like I'm describing.
Right,
that's
coddling, they sell them. They call them egg poachers, and they're not really. That's sort of you bake them in a water bath is what you're actually doing there.
Right. What word did Henry just used a word for that?
That's coddled eggs, right? When you do it in a bain marie,
a coddled egg.
That's a coddled egg.
Yeah.
And those are in the book too. Those are usually covered and cooked in a water bath.
Okay.
I love coddled eggs.
Okay.
So it's not a bad way to cook eggs, but it's not poaching them. Poaching means dropping them into a liquid. And that liquid doesn't have to be water. It can be stock. It can be tomato sauce, as you were mentioning earlier, eggs in purgatory. Great dish.
Let's take some phone calls here from our listeners. We're talking egg this hour with, that's the title of Michael Ruhlman's book, Egg, A Culinary Exploration of the World's Most Versatile Ingredient. Little Brown is the publisher of Michael's latest book. Aaron in Severna Park, following up on our conversation about hard-boiled eggs. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have this great deviled egg recipe. Pickled egg recipe.
Pickled eggs.
But I can never get the hard-boiled eggs either perfect with the yolk and easy to peel.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the cooking-peeling relationship right? And I'll hang up and listen.
The cooking-peeling relationship correctly. Well, Michael's idea is to use a pressure cooker. But if you don't have a pressure cooker and you're just going with a pan, a kettle at home, Henry?
Here's the thing. It's almost entirely dependent on the freshness of the eggs. So a fresh egg is going to be hard to peel. Now, I'm really anxious to try out Michael's technique of the pressure cooker to see if that actually makes a difference with fresh eggs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I haven't found anything. None of those, you know, old tricks work. The baking soda, anything. As far as cooking, see, when I hard boil my eggs, I do it totally differently than what Michael was talking about, which is the hard cook for 7 minutes and then the quick chill down. I use the Julia Child method where you only boil for 2 minutes and then you actually leave them in the cooking water, heat off, covered, until they're cool, which is about another 15 minutes.
Huh.
And they come out perfect every time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I do it as well, because I don't always use pressure cooker. If I'm just doing a few eggs and I know that, say, for egg salad or something, I totally agree that you put cold eggs in cold water, covered by about an inch, bring it to a boil, cover it, take it off the heat, and then leave them in there for 15 and as much as 18 minutes, and then you chill them and they're perfect.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
That sounds simple. Here's Mark calling from Annapolis with a little bit more on hard-boiled eggs, some advice for us and our listeners. Hello, Mark.
Hi. I had been told that by a friend who was Taiwanese that she could tell when an egg was hard-boiled by when she could pick it up with chopsticks.
In a wooden break.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Mark,
what that means.
Is that what she meant? That you would just the shell wouldn't the yolk wouldn't come out.
You could grasp it. I guess because the inside wasn't liquid any longer.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I assumed.
That kind of makes sense with to me.
I don't know. I think I could probably pick up a raw egg with chopsticks.
You could.
I'm going to let that go, Dan.
Well,
but
no,
anyway.
I'm just saying, you're probably more practiced than I. You should see me with chopsticks. It's a mess. It's very sad.
No, but maybe it's because of the outer layer that's on unpasteurized eggs is cooked off at that point. But one test for a raw or a cooked egg is, you know, if you spin it on a table. So if it spins around real fast, it's cooked. If it kind of wobbles around, it's raw.
Oh, okay.
Because it's two different densities of liquid in there.
Oh, that's a good way to tell what you're reaching for in the refrigerator.
Yeah, yeah.
What about the just running them under cold water when you finish boiling them? You don't like that?
Well, it's not that I don't like it.
It's not necessary.
I'll wait till they're cool.
Just wait
I'll peel them under running water if they're a little bit hard to peel to, you know, get the shell fragments
right
away, you know.
Okay. I wanted to ask Michael Ruhlman this question. Egg kind of shows up as a topping on a lot of things. I don't know if it's a trend of recent years. It's something that I've noticed. It's savory dishes, all kinds of things. I've seen it on pizza, you know.
Burgers.
Hamburgers. What do you think of that trend?
I think it's a fabulous trend, and I encourage it always. I don't know of anything that's not better with an egg put on top of it.
This man loves an egg. He loves eggs.
You know, a burger is better. A steak is better. A sandwich is better. A salad is better. You know, a stir fry is better. It's all fabulous. You know, you've got this nutritious protein, and you've got this yolk, which is basically already its own sauce and enriching a dish. And then you've got the drama of breaking open the yolk and the beauty of the yolk, the egg on a plate. So there's just so many things going on when you add an egg to a dish.
The thing I like about eggs is they are versatile. It's a perfect word for it. But they can always get you through a pinch when there's very little in the house to eat. You know, one of those Thursday nights when there's only some spring onion in the maybe a can of tuna fish or something. An egg will get you through that. An egg,
it will.
Right? I mean, Michael, isn't that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great fallback. It's something we usually just keep regularly in the kitchen. It's there. You can cook it. You can scramble it. You can make a frittata. You can, if you only have a little bit, you know, you got one small potato, say, and maybe a few greens, you can make a frittata. You can extend a shortage of ingredients, or you can make the egg a feature of a meal. Yeah, it's absolutely one of the great items in our kitchen, and because they're so inexpensive and ubiquitous, we've taken them for granted, I think. And I think we're just now realizing what a great miracle this we have in the egg. I mean, the egg, it's everything needed to create life is inside this beautiful, delicate but sturdy shell. How could it not be a fabulous thing to cook with?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to just reiterate the economy of it. I mean, you know, it's a dozen of them of your, you know, standard industrial eggs you can get for a dollar. You know, and an egg, we're talking about, you know, a couple ounces of...
Excuse me, did you just say you could get a dozen eggs for a dollar?
Yeah, Aldi has
Where?
A dozen eggs for a dollar.
Aldi's?
Yeah, Aldi does. But, I mean, and
okay.
So here's the thing, because it's so cheap...
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And, I hear a lot of good things about Aldi's.
Aldi's, hey. Yeah, but, you know, it's, and like for anything, you add an egg, it becomes a meal suddenly, you know, instant noodles. You add an egg, it's dinner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So a salad as well. But, you know, that's why I always encourage my friends, you know... Okay, $3 and $4 for the high boutique eggs at your Whole Foods or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like three times more than you'd normally pay,
right.
But it's still only a couple of bucks.
That's right. It's
you know
a great,
what I mean?
Yeah,
and
you get a lot of mileage out of the eggs.
There's such a big difference, even just visually, flavor wise.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's, if there's one thing worth spending a couple extra bucks on every week for your food purchases, it's the eggs.
They stay good
more than most other foods in your refrigerator, which is one reason why they're such a good fallback.
What do you think the shelf life on an egg is? Real
month,
Michael. Have you figured that out? What do you think? Is it a month?
No, I haven't. But the good trick is, if it floats, it's probably a little old. What happens is the moisture actually evaporates through the porous shell, and air fills up where the water was left, and it will actually float. And that's when you know an egg is not very fresh.
Okay.
Also,
if you break it open and it stinks,
yeah, that's a pretty good
test.
Yeah,
if you shake it around and you can feel the yolk moving easily, that's also a sign of a very old egg.
Okay,
yeah.
thank you, Henry. Let's take another call. This is Max in Moncton, Maryland. Hi, Max.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Y'all are all my favorites. Henry, I took your your Voltron gumbo in your meatloaf. It's wonderful.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
Yeah. And but I learned this week from Serious Eats, Kenji Lopez-Alt, he did hard-boiled eggs. And what he did, I always used the Julia Child method.
Yep.
But it's kind of like Michael Ruhlman's method, except that he put them in a steamer basket with just half an inch of water in it so it boils quickly, 12 minutes in the steamer basket, in an ice bath for 10 minutes, and you peel them underwater. And I did food bank eggs that we got locally. The peels fell off in a matter of seconds.
I like that. So steaming and chilling, steaming, icing, and then underwater peeling.
Yes. Huh. And I also did a Fresh America's Best eggs, and they were a little harder to peel. But the thing is I had 14 eggs that were perfect without a pit in either one. It was freaky. legs at them.
Mark that day down on your calendar.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Max. I mentioned eggs in purgatory, uova in purgatorio, and this is a recipe I picked up from Mrs. Gioconda Manetta in Little Italy in Baltimore. It was nice on a winter Saturday lunch. She made it for me, and I'd never had this when I was a kid. My mother never made it, but she did. She'd take a piece of Italian bread and toast it, a couple of pieces, and put it in your plate. And then she'd have a nice marinara sauce going on the stove, and she'd drop a couple of eggs in it. There's the eggs in purgatory. The eggs are halfway between heaven and hell somewhere. They cook inside your marinara sauce. And I think she had some, I think she's Calabrese. I think she put some olives in the sauce too. And anyway, once the egg was firm, it was almost like poaching an egg in a marinara sauce, if
sure.
you can imagine that.
Sure.
She lifted it out, placed each one on top of the toasted bread, the toasted Italian bread, and that's the way we had eggs in purgatory. Michael, do you know that recipe?
I do. I put a version in the book. It's eggs in puttanesca sauce.
Oh, I missed it. Oh, I got to see
which
that.
Which is beautiful.
I didn't see that one.
The photo is gorgeous.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I got to see this.
Yeah, that's
go
about
ahead.
Page 52
yeah, Michael,
and 53.
Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Well, I just wanted to do an eggs in purgatory style dish because it's one that I know and like.
Yeah.
There's in Israel, they have somebody help me with the name, shishushka.
Yes,
the same idea of cooking in a tomato sauce, and I love puttanesca sauce. I love the anchovy, and I love the olive, and I love the heartiness of it. And so we just thought we'd do it that way.
Wow! I just found it here. Eggs in puttanesca with angel hair pasta serves four. You have capers in that recipe. Well, of course, it's puttanesca,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
You can put almost anything in there. Thank you, Michael. Here's an email I wanted to read. This one is from Nayeli. Nayeli says, practice that sunny side up egg, Dan, and then fry up a corn tortilla to make a tostada and homemade tomatillo salsa. Put the egg on top of the tostada and then top it off with the salsa. Yum, yum, yum. That's what I grew up eating in our Mexican household.
It's huevos rancheros.
That sounds a little bit like what I was just describing, the egg in purgatory. Let's see, Steve and Jane. I don't know which one's writing here. It's either Steve or Jane. It says, I've read that eggs do not contribute to high cholesterol in the body, yet every advice still says not to eat more than one per day, regardless of what else you are eating or not eating. Can your guest shed some light on this? Since I eat a lot of eggs, thanks. I'll go to Michael and then John Shields on this.
My position is, you know, we were told, I grew up in the 70s, and we were told eggs are bad for you. There's sort of an emblem of America's stupidity and listening to all sorts of bad advice. You can eat as many eggs as your body wants, I think. Believe me, there were times when I didn't want to eat the eggs when we were testing these recipes because my body was saying you don't need all this egg. Otherwise, you can eat what you want. The cholesterol in an egg is not blood serum cholesterol. It's egg cholesterol. It's a different thing. It doesn't necessarily raise your blood serum cholesterol. So don't be fearful of eggs. You know, if your doctor says you're really overloaded on cholesterol, then maybe you want to take that advice. But otherwise, if you're normally healthy, you can eat eggs. And as long as your body wants, listen to your body. How does your body feel? We need to listen to that more than we need to listen to studies from ABC News and all these other reports that give you conflicting information. Listen to yourself. Use your common sense. Eat real food that you cook yourself. You don't have to worry about it.
John?
I think Michael's right. You know, you can eat and then you see how you feel. If you're going to your doctor and your doctor says, look, we have a problem here. I need you to back off on how many eggs you're eating. Mm-hmm. Well, then go with what the doctor said. Mm-hmm. But I think for most healthy people who don't have any cardiovascular disease, that, you know, eggs in moderation are absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're good for you. They're more than fine. They're nutritious and economical and delicious. They're good for you.
It was just a few years ago, I guess, because you're right. I grew up in the 70s, too, and the whole we were taught to learn that, you know, eggs were bad for you. That's why egg white omelets are on even, you know, greasiest of the greasy spoon menus. But it was just a few years ago where I guess it was the FDA or whatever the governing body is said that the benefit of eggs would outweigh any, you know, detrimental health effects if there mm-hmm. were any.
Yeah, remember that.
And the other thing is, you know, yeah, there's still, as far as I know, there's no link between dietary and blood serum cholesterol. It's just like a hardcore precautionary measure.
Right. The fact is nobody knows anything for certain, period.
About food especially, that's true.
That's true across the board with all food. They're just coming out with studies saying that saturated fat does not necessarily lead to heart disease, something we've been long told.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, there's been no long-term studies on people, on human beings. They're just assumptions. Oh, eggs have cholesterol in the yolk. Therefore, they must raise your blood serum cholesterol if you eat a lot of eggs. Well, it's not true.
Michael Ruhlman, they said the same thing about butter, too. Butter and eggs both got a bad rap there back in the 70s and 80s. We'll take a break here and come back and talk some more about egg, a culinary exploration of the world's most versatile ingredient. Michael Ruhlman, the author of that book. Dan Roderick's here. Another edition of Midday Eats with John Shields and Henry Hahn. A short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday Eats. Dan Roderick's here on WYPR with John Shields from Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art and Henry Hong of Waterfront Kitchen. And we're joined this hour by food writer Michael Ruhlman talking about his new book and all of its ingredients. The book is called Egg, truly an homage to the egg and how many uses there are of the egg, how many ways to cook the egg. I just want to take a couple of minutes here just to talk about the egg is a communion meal. You'll hear in the background a scene from a movie. There's not much stated in this scene from the movie. In fact, there's very few words. It's the 1996 movie Big Night, starring Stanley Tucci and Tony Shalhoub as two Italian brothers trying to make it in the restaurant business on the Jersey Shore, New Jersey Shore in 1950, sometime in the 1950s. And the egg plays a key role in the story's sweet epilogue, which is playing in the background here. It's radio, you can't see it. But Stanley Tucci's making scrambled eggs. The brothers have this big night, and the big night fails. They've lost all their money, and they're likely going to lose their restaurant. And they have a falling out, and they have a drunken down fight on the beach that night. But the next morning, and this is the scene from the next morning, Tucci gets up, and he's still in his tuxedo shirt, and he starts making scrambled eggs, and he makes them so beautifully. This is the Italian way. Olive oil, hot olive oil in a pan, scramble the eggs, pinch of salt, maybe a little Parmesan, and you throw that thing, and you throw it into this hot oil, and it gets voluminous. It grows as it's cooking. Anyway, this is a beautiful scene here. He scrambles the eggs, he fries them up in the olive oil, he sets out a plate of eggs and a basket of leftover Italian bread for his brother, played by Tony Shalhoub. And the two of them, after they have had this fight the night before, they share the eggs and the bread, and they end up with one arm on each other's shoulders, basically. They're sort of hugging each other as they're eating the eggs one-handed. And it's a great scene. It's one of the best final scenes from one of the best movies ever, I think.
Yeah.
You know that scene, John?
I do know that scene.
Michael Ruhlman, you know that scene too from Big Night?
I sure do. It's a beautiful scene and a great movie.
I love the way, and I love I cook the eggs this way. So I tell people the hot olive oil and the scrambled eggs. You know what I'm talking about? How it grows? It sort of balloons on you a little
bit.
It does, Michael.
Yeah, I think it's the sort of the water in the egg is expanding as it becomes vapor and it blows up the egg.
Yeah.
It's a great way. So if you scramble three eggs, it'll look like five or six eggs when you're done, if you do it right.
It does.
Anyway, back here with Michael Ruhlman, Henry Hong, and John Shields, we'll take another call from one of our guests, Jake. I'm one of our listeners, Jake in Mount Washington. Go right ahead, Jake.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
One comment I just wanted to make was that I love egg yolk on pasta with, sort of linguine or anything like that. And I wanted to ask a question. I've been to other countries, like in the Yucatan and Mexico, and at the markets, they don't chill their eggs. They're not kept refrigerated. And I was wondering if that was true in other countries, and if so, why the obsession with doing it here in the U.S.?
You mean with chilling them? Yeah, okay.
We need to refrigerate our eggs if we wash them. When they're laid, they have a special coating on them that preserves them and protects them. And so what these eggs that you've seen in Mexico, they've just never been refrigerated, and they've never been washed, and they're perfectly fine.
Okay. All right. He mentioned eggs on noodles, on pasta. And, John, you wanted me to mention the carbonara.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael, do you mind if I mention the carbonara?
I would be most grateful if you mentioned the carbonara.
Yeah. You know, today is actually the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and carbonara goes back, it goes back to World War II. American soldiers in Italy had access to bacon, and they had access to eggs, and they met local people in the little villages in Italy as they were marching through, going through, and they had pasta. So that's the story I've been given over the years about how carbonara came to be. Other people believe the word carbonara refers to charcoal, refers to coal miners making themselves breakfast with pasta, eggs, and some pork, usually bacon, and some cheese. But the other story is a World War II story. I kind of like the first one.
I like that story.
Yeah, I like that story.
I don't think
better.
I've ever heard that one.
Anyway.
I think they both can be true, and it does make sense. I mean, carbonara does mean carbon in there, and that they could have learned this peasant dish from the Italians, and very likely did.
Yeah.
Only when they came back, we didn't have guanciale, which the Italians would have used, the cured pork jowl. They would have used the closest thing to it, which would be bacon.
Right.
And it's every bit as good as using guanciale.
Oh, my God. That's the ultimate Italian comfort food dish. Everything's there. Bacon, eggs, cheese, olive oil, butter, lots of pepper. Henry, you know about carbonara.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a carbonara off that you keep ducking me.
Yes. You want to do that?
Every time you say the same thing, but let me just quickly...
You think you make a better carbonara than me?
Don't give me that look.
Are you looking at me?
But real quick...
I'm looking at you.
I just got married, so my new wife is going to kill me, but back when I was a single guy, carbonara was my go-to, like, to impress.
Oh, it impresses.
The morning after dish,
yes.
Instead of your, you know, whatever, like, fake omelet.
Oh, you mean for breakfast?
Yeah, because, again, you have all that stuff. You have bacon, you have eggs.
Yeah.
Hopefully some decent cheese
and
spaghetti.
Yeah.
So I used to make spaghetti carbonara.
Right.
Yeah.
The spaghetti is the recommended pasta for that. Not the linguine, not fettuccine, just that.
But, yeah.
And Michael, also, eggs show up actually in pastas, in the making of pasta, egg noodles.
Absolutely. That's how you make great pasta. You can either make it just with the yolks. I learned how to make that pasta out at the French Laundry with Thomas Keller, and he used to say that he used to see how many yolks you could get into a kilo of flour to make the richest possible pasta. But just making just whole eggs with pasta is really so simple and so delicious and completely a different product from what you can buy at the store. This is what I love to do. I love to make things that you can't buy. You can't buy homemade mayonnaise. I don't, you know, as I said earlier, I like Hellmann's mayonnaise. It's fine, but it's a completely different product than a mayonnaise I can make myself. Egg noodles are the same. Are the same thing. They're fun to make. They're delicious. You know, I'd love. You know, I think you're transforming food, and that's for people who like to cook. That's the ultimate pleasure.
Let's take another call. This is from Baltimore, and the caller's name is Quan. You're on Midday Eats. Quan, go right ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Hi.
What did you want to ask or say?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I have a question about raw eggs, actually. When I make my carbonara, I use raw eggs, and I guess the hot pasta helps cook it. But what about in like a Caesar salad dressing or a mayonnaise?
Yeah, Michael deals with that in his book. I guess Caesar salad is a classic reference there when it comes to a raw egg. Michael?
when I'm serving raw eggs, I usually try and get the best quality eggs that I can. There is a small danger of salmonella getting into the yolk. I've never, that I know of, gotten salmonella. It's very, very rare. So I've always eaten any egg raw without thought. I garnish a steak tartare, a raw beef with a raw egg yolk. It's delicious. So if you buy good eggs or farm fresh eggs, I would use them with abandon and not worry. If someone's immune system is compromised for some reason or very old, you may want to take precautions. But if you're normally healthy, eat raw eggs and don't worry about it.
Okay.
From what I understand, salmonella, the only way to get into the egg would be from if it was present on the shell. So actually,
that's not true.
Is that not true? Okay, because I've always heard that.
No, the chicken can actually, it gets inside the chicken, and it gets inside their ovaries and inside the yolk.
Ah, gotcha.
So, alas, I wish what you said was true, but it's not. And you can read McGee on that, Harold McGee on Food and Cooking explains how this can be.
When I was a kid, I was in a bar, and I shouldn't have been there because I was too little. My father took me into this bar, and he got me a Coca-Cola. My father was drinking a beer and a chaser, and the guy next to him was drinking a beer. And then I see the guy take a raw egg from the bartender, gives him a raw egg, and he drops it in his beer. Mm-hmm. And then he drank the whole thing down. Now, what was going on there? Shields, do you know about that, John?
Oh, yeah, I was at the bar.
What was that? And this was Joe's Spa.
And they did. They did. What they would crack an egg and they put
it into
the beer.
What was that, a way of getting protein? What is that?
It was supposedly, it was going to make you healthy. Was this in the morning?
It was a Saturday afternoon.
All right, so it was almost brunch at the bar. But a lot of the bars, you'd be there at 6, 7 in the morning.
What is that?
And they would just crack. It also was supposed to be a little bit of a cure for a hangover. Now, of course, we know it was a hair of the dog that was really curing,
right.
but the egg didn't hurt.
Boy, that was a strange thing. I'll never forget that guy. And he gulped it all down like Rocky in the movie with his 9 eggs all at one time. Michael, do you know anything about the raw egg and beer?
It sounds pretty gross to me, but it could be a good excuse. You can call it breakfast if you put put an egg in it.
I think it was.
It is nutritious, of course. Now, what I would like to mention is egg whites are a great addition to cocktails, like a good whiskey sour or a Ramos Jim Fizz relies on egg white for the body that it gives a cocktail.
Hmm.
You can also have one at noon and call it lunch.
Here's another call. This is Julia in Baltimore with a question for our guest. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about goose eggs.
Hmm.
Do they taste like chicken eggs? If you wanted to hard-boil one, how long would it take? And have you ever hard-boiled a goose egg?
Hmm.
I've never worked with goose eggs, only duck eggs. All poultry eggs, to me, taste pretty much alike. Duck eggs have really big yolks relative to the white. They're delicious to cook with. I imagine goose eggs would be even more delicious to cook with. As far as timing goes, I don't know. I'd use your common sense and just add a few more minutes on for hard boiling them. But I would definitely try poaching a goose egg first to see how it worked, how it tasted. And I would probably put it on some goose confit hash. And make a good breakfast of it.
I just saw that. I was going to say, that's in Michael's cookbook, that confit hash that you just mentioned. Nate's in Roland Park. Go right ahead, Nate.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just very, very quickly, you know, talk about good eggs and good recipes. The single best egg I've ever eaten in my entire life was in a small village outside of Madrid in Spain. A friend and I walked across Spain one summer, and we ended up at his grandmother's house. And in the morning, the first day we were there, she cooked this egg that I've never tasted anything like it. It was almost poached in olive oil, practically. And it was just so simple and so good, perfectly creamy. The yolk was creamy, yet warm on the inside, and the edges were brown and crisp, like a cracker.
Hey, I don't know, Nate, we got to go. Nate, we're out of time, but let me ask Michael, is that the deep-fried egg that you referred to in your book?
It sounds like it was a deep-fried egg in olive oil, which would be absolutely fabulous.
Wow.
Yeah, it does. From the description of the photograph in your book, it does. It sounds fabulous. I never I've never tried that, but I will now. And Mark wrote in by email to give me some advice on frying an egg sunny side up. Thank you very much, Mark. I'll take this home with me. He recommends a small omelet pan with a tight-fitting lid. So thank you, everybody, for helping Dan out here, too. And Michael Ruhlman, it's a pleasure to have you on our show today. Thank you very much.
Oh, this has been a delightful conversation. Yep. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Michael Ruhlman joining us from Cleveland, where he lives. His latest book is Egg, A Culinary Exploration, of the World's Most Versatile Ingredient, published by Little Brown. John Shields and Doug back at the kitchen at Gertrude's, thank you very much for bringing the angel food cake. Do we get to try it now?
Absolutely.
Okay. And Henry Hong down at the Waterfront Kitchen, say hi to everybody for us down there. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Midday today and all week long. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back again on Monday, another week of programming here from WYPR. So thank you very much for listening and supporting the show. See you next week.